It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. And happy Independence Day, 4th of July tomorrow, one of my most favorite holidays. And I hope that you all have a safe and a wonderful holiday. I'd really recommend to make sure that you read our Declaration of Independence. It's something that typically we try to do or have started to do when everybody gets together on the 4th of July. So would highly recommend that you do that. Want to say thank you to the team, to producer Steve, Zach, Keith, Patty, and Charlie, and to each of you listeners, thank you. You're treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Strive for excellence and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Thrill these next, the second, third, and fourth segment, we will be talking with patriotic historian and former Army Ranger, Ben Martin, about America's founding, about the Declaration. So that's going to be a great conversation. But my gosh, Steve, have we not had some very important guests this week? The conversations have just been awesome.
They have. And whether we're talking in the, let me get my centuries correct here, the 18th century things that are important to us or the 19th century things that are important to us, it's just, our history is so rich and helps us understand today and maybe even beyond today. But at the same time, you have to scratch your head. Yet there are so many who are out there seeking to wipe it out. So it's good that we went through all the shows that we did with the guests that we did to revisit some of these things.
Well, for sure. And, you know, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to government force, and that's where government has the power to control everything. So you may have your, and under socialism, you may have your house, you may have your car, you may have a few things, but actually all of the production and everything is controlled through rules and regulations. And so the Declaration of Independence was put in place to protect this idea, that this vision of that every man is created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And of course, that was embodied in the Constitution. And so our quote for today is Thomas Jefferson. You know him, we've talked about him. He's like basically credited with authoring the Declaration of Independence. He penned the first version. There was a committee of five, and then they came in, they edited it, and then they presented it to the Continental Congress, and they edited it and took out a bunch of it. I hope he wasn't offended on that, Steve.
Well, a committee is always, you know, what's the Abilene theory of people? People in groups tend to agree to courses of action, which is individuals they know are stupid. So, you know, committees.
Well, they got to a pretty beautiful document this time around. But,
yeah.
You know, another thing that he said, as I was looking for quotes, he said, the two enemies of the people are criminals and government. So let us tie the second down with the chains of the Constitution so the second will not become the legalized version of the first.
You know, we quoted quite a bit this week. I think that's probably the best or the most significant, most important quote we've had all week.
You know, I can't say that I'd ever seen this one before.
Sure is powerful. Because
it is.
Here we are, we're doing it. And especially when you think of certain recent presidents who kept on banging away at the Constitution saying it wasn't really relevant anymore.
Right. And we've seen that in our universities and our colleges, where they've been teaching instead of the original Constitution, that it is a living, breathing document that changes with the times. But you can see there's really no foundation on it. It means it would just move around to what people feel at the time instead of these principles, this idea. I mean, how, you know, who said it? I can't remember who said it. If all men are created equal, then that's final. There's really no more discussion on it, right? I mean, that's not going to evolve into anything else. If all men are created equal, that should be final, right, Steve?
Well, so then you have to go out and say, well, is that really true? Are all men really created equal? So you can undermine it.
But we are. We are. We're all created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And the American idea was put in place to try to let that play out. Now, it wasn't perfect. We realize that. It's never perfect. But it is the most perfect ideal of government out there, Steve.
Well, that the word perfect gets us into more trouble sometimes than it really needs to be, because perfection is never really achieved on the human scale.
You can't get to that. You can't really strive for perfection, but you can strive for excellence. And would you say that the Declaration, the American idea, is excellent? Most definitely.
Well, there are many people around the world. We talked about Tocqueville earlier this week and his admiration for the Constitution and for the American experiment. And, you know, some people get it, and sometimes those people aren't necessarily citizens of this country.
Well, speaking of citizens of our country, you know, America has been a place that people have wanted to come here because of freedom. And you don't see, gosh, you know what, you haven't seen caravans in a long time, have you? You don't see caravans trying to get into Venezuela or Cuba. People want to come to America because in America, anything is possible.
I'm sitting here chuckling because we've all seen the footage of the makeshift rafts coming north from Cuba. We've never seen the rafts going the other way.
Yeah, you know, true that for sure. So anyway, we have this great show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Ben Martin in segments 2, 3, and 4, and it's always rich. It's always a great conversation when we talk to Ben. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners, and they have 5 locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They're open for dine-in, yay, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. And Monday through Friday is happy hour, 3 to 6 p.m. They have some specials there. And then Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings that you can eat for $15.99. And they're doing all kinds of specials. So be sure and go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com. Or you can go to my website. All of my valued partners are there. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich and Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich and Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich and Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We would appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. And happy Independence Day. And on the line with me is Ben Martin. You know him. He is my friend. He is a former Army Ranger as well as a patriotic historian. And we are going through this fabulous show once a month brought to you by the Harris family. And it is the important speeches and documents of the American founding. And it just worked out that we're going to be talking about the Declaration of Independence. So welcome, Ben Martin. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. Happy Independence Day to you, too.
It is an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing to celebrate, you know, a number of these Fireworks displays and celebrations have been canceled. But even with that, we need to take time. Maybe it's an opportunity for us to take time, sit down, read the Declaration of Independence. It's not that long. So let's jump in here. Where do we want to go with this, Ben Martin?
Well, today we're going to talk about these documents and these people that contributed so much to our Declaration of Independence, the making of our Declaration of Independence. And it's an extension from our presentation that we did on the 23rd about Patrick Henry, and we talk about him, and then we're going to go from Patrick Henry to talking about the people from Virginia, George Mason. We're going to talk about Jefferson, and we're going to talk about John Adams, and we're going to talk about the particular things they did to contribute to the success of the successful making of the Declaration of Independence.
Well, and the show that you referred to was the June 23rd show, where you talked about Patrick Henry, a powerful show. So you can go back to and listen to that show. Go to my website, kimmunson.com, and you can find it there. So continue on, Ben.
Well, we're talking what was happening with the time that Patrick Henry was working and all of these other people were working in Virginia was something that happened because of the Boston Tea Party, and then we had these coercive acts from the British, or what the Americans call the Intolerable Acts. And so the Virginians, to react to that, to put plans together, had these five Virginia conventions. And one after the other, over a period of almost 2 years, 75 and 76. The last one was number five, and that was the one we talked about last, and that's the one we're going to start with today. And that's where the people, the delegates from Virginia, go to the second Constitution, or the Second Continental Congress, that started in May of 1776. They sent many delegates, but the two important delegates that they sent to that were one George Mason and the other was Thomas Jefferson, along with Richard Henry Lee. So we'll talk about that. And I want to start with talking about the most profound writings on political science ever written in America, and without exaggeration, perhaps the world, is the Federalist Papers. Thomas Jefferson certainly thought so when he described the Federalist Papers as the best commentary on the principles of government, whichever was written. The Federalist Papers is not only the best commentary on the principles of government in general, but it is the most importantly the best commentary on the principles of our American government. Besides being so profound in its content, it is equally beautiful in its language. It has been said it is written in the language of statesmen or of statesmanship. The Federalist Papers contain so many important and beautiful quotes, passages, to that a political scholar could spend a lifetime analyzing only these. One of my favorite quotes or passages comes from Federalist number 39, and it goes like this. In disquisitions of every kind, there are certain primary truths or first principles upon which all subsequent reasoning must depend. Now let's look closely at that statement. What are disquisitions? According to Webster's 1828 dictionary, which was actually the first American dictionary and the dictionary most aligned with the meaning of words in our founders' time, gives this definition. Disquisition is a noun, comes from the Latin to seek, a formal or systematic inquiry into any subject by arguments or discussions of the facts and circumstances that may elucidate truth, as a disquisition on government or morals. So we know it's a formal or systematic inquiry into any subject by argument or discussion of facts and circumstances to elucidate truth. So what are the primary truths, the first principles of our founding, and where can they be found? The answer to that is the subject of our program today. It is the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence has been called the greatest document of human liberty ever written. With that quote from the Federalist Papers, along with the definition of disquisitions from America's first dictionary, and that description of the Declaration of Independence, let us begin our inquiry into our founding principles. We'll start with George Mason. George Mason was the author of the Virginia Declaration of Rights, important to the Declaration of Independence. He was a chief author also of the Virginia Constitution. He worked with James Madison on these, who became a lifelong friend. They were friends until Mason died. Along with Madison, he is the father of the Bill of Rights, the American Bill of Rights. He was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention in 1787, and one of the three delegates who refused to sign the Constitution.
Why was that?
Well, that was mainly because that the Constitution didn't have a Declaration of Rights, or a Bill of Rights, as we call it there. And this is really key to Mason, because while Mason was writing this, the first thing, the author of the Virginia Declaration of Rights, he was also writing the Virginia State Constitution. And so he included in the people from Virginia, also included his Virginia Declaration of Rights into the Virginia Constitution. And that became the first article of the Virginia Constitution. So you can see this was really critical to him. It was one of the things he was really concerned with. In our last program on 23 June, which we talked about earlier, we discussed Patrick Henry and made special mention of the 5th Virginia Convention, in which the Patriots of Virginia met to form and carry out plans of action to resist the British measures of the Intolerable Acts of 1774. Things like the Port Act, the Government Act, the Justice Act, the Quartering Act, plus the Quebec Act. The 5th Virginia Convention was especially important because delegates from the Virginia Convention played important roles in the Second Continental Congress and the making of the Declaration of Independence. Founders like Richard Henry Lee, who proposed the resolution on independence, and Thomas Jefferson, of course, who was the main author of the Declaration of Independence. The 5th Virginia Convention, which again we talked about on the 23rd of June, also made a couple of important documents of their own. Those important documents were the Virginia Declaration of Rights, which was ratified on 12 June 1776, and the Virginia Constitution of 1776. The chief author of both of these historical documents was George Mason. He came from a long line of Masons who called Virginia their home. His great-grandfather, George Mason I, came to Virginia in the 1650s and received large tracts of land as a reward for bringing his party to Virginia. His grandfather, George Mason II, was the first to move into what would become Fairfax County, Virginia. And his father, George Mason III, served in the House of Burgesses. When George Mason IV, our hero today, was only 10, his father died when his boat capsized while crossing the Potomac River. His mom and his uncle, John Mercer, raised him as co-guardians. His education was provided by solely dedicated professional tutors and his uncle, John Mercer, who was a very brilliant man and who owned one of the largest libraries in Virginia. In 1746, George turned 21 and inherited his father's estate, which included thousands of acres of farmland in Virginia and Maryland, and thousands of acres of uncleared forest lands in the western country. In 1750, George married Anne Eilbeck, and they would have 9 children who survived 2 adults. Now, that is a very rare achievement.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anne died in 1773, and that was the result of a childbirth gone bad. Their marriage was, by all accounts, a happy one. However, Mason's caring for his 9 motherless children often caused him to decline political appointments or arrive late to ones that he would accept.
Boy, just think about that. That's astonishing. We have about a minute before we go to break. So what else should we talk about before we do that?
Well, we should talk about, and we can go, how important the Virginia Declaration of Rights were, not only to our Declaration of Independence, but also to the Virginia Constitution, and later to our Constitution, and finally to our Bill of Rights. It contains 16 articles, and I'm going to read the articles really quickly that address the Declaration of Independence. Articles 1 through 3 address the subjects of rights and relationships between government and the governed, and has great influence on the Declaration of Independence. Article 1 states, and listen closely to how it states it, all men are by nature equally free and independent and have certain inherent rights of which they cannot be deprived or divest their posterity. Namely, the enjoyment of life and liberty with the means of acquiring and possessing property and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Articles 2 and 3 note the revolutionary concept that all power is vested in and consequently derived from the people, and that whenever any government shall be found inadequate or contrary to those purposes, a majority of the community has an indubitable and unalienable right to reform, alter, or abolish it. And those laws basically cover the principles of the Declaration of Independence. And it's obvious to anyone that's familiar with both documents.
Right. It sounds very familiar on that. So, Ben Martin, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show. I'm talking with former Army Ranger and patriotic historian Ben Martin. This is our important documents and writings of the American founding. The show's brought to us by the Harris family. Thank you to them. Before we go to break, one of my sponsors is Hooters Restaurants. And they know that it's been a very difficult time. We've been apart, but they are now starting to have people come into the restaurants, of course, with all of the social distancing and all of that, or physical distancing. And so they have delivery, takeout, or dine-in. Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings that you can eat for $15.99. And they have lunch specials every day, and kids eat free with dine-in or to-go. So be sure to go to order.hooters.com to get more information. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin. Hey, Jason McBride. Tomorrow is Independence Day. I have to tell you, it is one of my most favorite holidays. Now, a lot of these cities and counties have decided not to have their, you know, their big fireworks, which really, really makes me sad. But we're still going to have a celebration. I love Independence Day.
I think it's great, too. Now, when I was a kid, the 4th of July was my favorite day just because I was a fireworks nut.
Oh,
I don't think I'm a pyromaniac, but I really love blowing off the fireworks, and I still enjoy it to this day. And my kids love it. As long as nobody gets blown up or burned, I think it's a great day.
Well, it is. And speaking of that, I remember as a kid, we were at my grandparents, and they had a little retaining wall. It was about 3 feet high. And my cousin, for some reason, thought it was a good idea to hold black cats and light them and then throw them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of running back, and he did that. And I remember he fell over the back of that wall. I don't know. That's just a 4th of July memory mm-hmm. that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Those are, Little memories like that from childhood. I remember one on the 4th, we always had a bucket of water just in case, you know, and I was kind of a hyper kid and I was running around with the fireworks, step right in the bucket and fell over backwards, probably much like your cousin.
That's hysterical. Love that. So what's our quote for today?
Well, this one is from Mark Twain, and since, you know, Ben Martin is on and he's a big freedom guy, you know, Mark Twain said, "No man's life, liberty, or property is safe while Congress is in session."
Or the Colorado State Legislature.
Well, boy, that seems to get more true every year that goes by. You know, there's actually, I don't know if it still exists. At one time, Kim, there was a mutual fund that every time Congress went into session, the mutual fund sold all their stocks and went into cash and waited until they got the bad news out. Now, I don't know if it had good performance. I think it was kind of gimmicky. But the fact that any manager would say, we're going to use this strategy, and people would put money into it, actually tells you something.
Well, it does definitely tell you something. Oh my gosh, we're in a time right now, Jason McBride, and this Independence Day, I never thought that we'd be in the situation that we are in America. But, you know, I always talk about it. We stand on the shoulders of giants, these patriots, these founders, these veterans. We have a real responsibility, but tomorrow is going to be just a great day to think about our Declaration of Independence from Britain and just what a great country we get to live in.
Well, I think, you know, with all the garbage that's been going on lately and the bad news we've had and with the coronavirus and all the other stuff that's been going on, I think you're right, Kim. Tomorrow would be a good day to try to put that stuff aside and think about America and think about the very positive things, you know, at least for one day until we start getting blasted with the news again. So that's what I'm going to do.
Well, that's what I'm going to do as well. And Jason McBride, thank you. You know, I so appreciate your partnership and all that we do. And I wish you and Melissa and all your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management a really safe, happy Independence Day. So thank you so much, Jason.
The same to you and yours, and you too, Steve.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And
welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. And you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website as well. On the line with me is my friend, former Army Ranger and patriotic historian, Ben Martin. And we are talking about the Declaration of Independence. Before we went to break, Ben had highlighted the Virginia Declaration of Rights. And the first three, they sounded very familiar to something that we've heard both in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and Bill of Rights. So who's our next hero in this story, Ben Martin?
Our next hero and our next founder is John Adams. We all know we've talked about Samuel Adams before, and they were cousins. We talked about John Adams. He's done so much. And he's one of those founders that we're talking about here that most people know a fair amount about. You know, the other ones that we've been talking about are some that are not so well known and not obscure, but very important to this process of our American founding, and these three that we're talking about are very important to the
the Declaration of Independence, the creation and the passing of that. And John Adams was called the Atlas of Independence. That's how important his role was in this Declaration of Independence and in our Revolutionary War. All Americans, as I said, probably know him. He was a key founder during all phases of the American founding, starting with the pre-Revolutionary War period, in resisting the long train of abuses and usurpations of the British government as they tried to recover the expenses of the French and Indian War, which we've talked about before, from the American colonies. As America moved towards independence, he was called the Atlas of Independence by none other than Thomas Jefferson, the author of the Declaration, the main author of the Declaration of Independence. During the war, he was the leader of the Continental Congress as he supported General Washington in the Revolutionary War efforts. After the end of the war, he helped to negotiate the peace treaty in Paris with the British. In the post-Revolutionary War period, he became America's first ambassador to Great Britain. After the establishment of the U.S. government under the Constitution, he became America's first vice president and second president. So he covered the whole gamut.
Wow.
So today we look at him in this particular instance as the Atlas of Independence. And during that critical period of the Second Continental Congress, from May through July 1776, when our founders were deciding whether to declare independence from Great Britain, how to get undivided support from all American colonies for that declaration, and what that declaration would say if, when John Adams earned his celebrated title of the Declaration, the Atlas of Independence. That's the part of his life that we're going to concentrate on today. Now, when Richard Henry Lee from Virginia, from that famous Virginia series of Virginia conventions, made his famous proposal for independence, he had gotten the word from the 5th Virginia Convention to say that it was okay for him to propose independence to the Continental Congress, and that all states, all colonies should join in that. That these united, and this is the quote that he used in his proposal, that these united colonies, and you'll probably be familiar with this because you're familiar with the Declaration of Independence, that these united colonies are in of right, ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved of all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. Adams immediately stood up and seconded Lee's proposal. When John Hancock then directed a committee be formed to write a suitable declaration to send to King George and the British government, he assigned John Adams to form it and to do it. John Adams chose the 5 members of the Committee of 5, which were to write the draft declaration for Congress's review and approval. He wisely chose Dr. Ben Franklin of Pennsylvania, the American sage, Robert Livingston of New York, the man who would give the first presidential oath to George Washington and help negotiate the Louisiana Purchase for President Thomas Jefferson, Roger Sherman of Connecticut, who would one day lead a committee in the Constitutional Convention that would fashion and pass the Great Compromise, and finally, that most gifted writer from Virginia, Thomas Jefferson. It was also Adams who convinced a hesitant Jefferson to be the principal writer of the Declaration with his 3 reasons. Reason 1, you are a Virginian, and a Virginian ought to appear at the head of this business. Reason 2, I am obnoxious, suspected, and unpopular. you are very much otherwise. Reason third, you can write 10 times better than I can. With that, Jefferson accepted the mantle of the premier or the premier writer of the Declaration's draft and presented it to Adams and Franklin first for their review. They each made some minor modifications. Jefferson made the changes on a fair copy to present to Congress. But first, Richard Henry Lee's proposal for independence had to be drafted, and the delegates had to vote to approve or deny. On 1 July 1776, now remember that, first of all, Lee proposed this on 7 June of 1776, and then Hancock, as the president, tabled it and said, we will give all of the delegates time to go back and consult with their states on what they want to do. This is a major move for us. And so we will take this up again on 1 July. But in the meantime, we need to write a declaration in case this passes, a suitable declaration. So on 1 July 1776, after the state delegates had had a chance to go home and talk to their states, on 1 July, they were to argue and vote on Lee's proposal. John Dickinson of Pennsylvania was the main speaker against independence, and he gave a convincing, but I would have to characterize it as a confidence-shaking speech, the essence of which was that the American colonies were not ready for war, not ready to fight against so powerful a force as the British military. It was almost a negative version of Patrick Henry's speech from the St. John's Church that occurred on 23 March, 1775. The essence of it all could be wrapped up in an analogy that Dickinson used during his speech. He likened our fighting the British military for our independence to braving a storm in a skiff made of paper. Adams was the Atlas of independence. He stood up and argued for independence. And I'm going to give a couple of passages from his speech to give the essence of it. So Adams stands up and says, sink or swim, live or die, I give my hand and my heart to this vote. He confirmed his belief in a divinity which shapes our ends. He asked, do we mean to submit? And then answered, I know we do not mean to submit. We never shall submit. He asserted, we shall not fail. The cause will rise up armies. The cause will create navies. The people will carry us. The declaration will inspire the people with increased courage. Sir, before God, I believe the hour is come. My judgment approves this measure, and my whole heart is in it. I am for the declaration. And by the blessings of God, I shall be my dying sentiment. It shall be my dying sentiment. Independence now and independence forever. After the arguments and speeches, the unofficial vote showed that South Carolina, Pennsylvania would vote no. Delaware would be tied, and New York was not allowed to vote, making the vote count 8 yeses, 2 noes, 1 tie, and 1 abstention. And 1 absent. All knew the vote had to be stronger than this. Edward Rutledge of South Carolina made a motion to postpone the vote until the next morning so that they could talk with the delegates. That evening, Franklin and Adams and Rutledge and McKean of Delaware went to work on persuading the delegation still not convinced on independence to vote for it. McKean took other action. He sent a writer for Delaware's missing delegate, Caesar Rodney, who was commanding the Delaware militia and fighting against loyalist insurgents in Delaware. Rodney, who was 80 miles away, was also suffering from a malignant facial cancer and the flu. To make matters worse, a torrential storm with lightning and rain was to hit the area that evening. On the morning of 2 July, the South Carolina delegates had been convinced to vote yes. The Pennsylvania delegates, who were to vote no, had deliberately absented themselves from the hall, which would allow Pennsylvania to also vote yes. And just before the morning session was to begin, a bone-tired, completely wearied Caesar Rodney rode up the street and strode into the hall, booted and spurred and covered from head to foot in mud. He had ridden all night through the storm, frequently changing horses, Pony Express style. Now Delaware could also vote yes. Now the vote count was 11 yeses, one abstention, and one absent, as close to unanimous as they could achieve.
Ben Martin, that's an, yes. It's an astounding story. Let's go to break, and we will continue with this amazing story of our declaration, bringing these men and what they were doing alive. It's just magical. So this is Kim Munson. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we'd appreciate it if you'd go over and give us a like at Facebook. This is an amazing show. We wish you all a very happy, safe Independence Day. We would encourage you to read the Declaration of Independence sometime this weekend. And on the line with me is my friend, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, and it is Ben Martin. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family, which we really appreciate that sponsorship as well. And Ben Martin, we went into break with one of the most amazing stories that I love, and I never knew it until I had taken a class that you were teaching, and that was the story of Caesar Rodney. So he comes in, he votes for independence, Delaware, the tie is broken, and they get to the unanimous vote that they want, basically. New York could not vote, and let's see, you said Pennsylvania abstained. So take
No, Pennsylvania didn't abstain. New York had to abstain because their Congress back home would not, their legislature would not allow them to vote. It was really their governor.
Okay, so New York did not vote, and then Pennsylvania was absent. So how did that work exactly? They just didn't show up, so that was considered then a yes vote?
The two people that were not for the declaration were persuaded by Franklin and Adams to not, so that because they weren't there, then Pennsylvania had a majority of their delegation, which voted for independence. And so their vote switched to that. So Pennsylvania was a yes. The only state that was absent was Rhode Island. They never sent anyone Continental Congress, the Second Continental Congress, that voted for and passed the Declaration of Independence.
Okay.
So now our third person that we're going to talk about is none other than the chief author of Declaration of Independence, Mr. Thomas Jefferson. And so we talk about him with Lee's proposal, which we've talked about now, Richard Henry Lee's proposal for independence. After it passed, the delegates could now turn their attention to reviewing the contents of the document, the draft document that they had started back in 7 June, and the Declaration. And so for almost the next 3 days, from the morning of 2 July until the evening of 4 July, the delegates went over the draft document with a fine-tooth comb. And when it was over, they had made over 80 modifications and had reduced the size of Jefferson's draft declaration by a full fourth, 25%.
Wow.
On the evening of 4 July, Congress gave it a final reading and then voted to approve it. The President, John Hancock, and the Secretary, Charles Thompson, signed it, and the Committee of Five transported it to the shop of John Dunlap for printing. In their hands were the first principles, the primary truths of a new form of government. It would be called the Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new order of the ages. And now that we are to that point, I wish to discuss some of those, and we can see again the similarity between those and the statements and the principles of the Virginia Declaration of Rights. So I'd like to start with the first part, and so everyone can understand our declaration. The first part of it, the first sentence or paragraph, but it's really all one sentence, talks about the reason, the object, and the authority by which we will declare our independence. And this is considered to be universal and timeless, and establishes a higher standard. In other words, we're not just doing this because of our own will, but we're basing this, our claim for independence, on the laws of nature and of nature's God. So let's listen to this really closely. The first paragraph, the first sentence: when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. To me, this whole document is the definition, the founder's definition, the founder's understanding of liberty, the responsible exercise of freedom. They're not saying, I'm just doing this because I want to do it, because I will it to be. I'm doing this based upon the established higher principles of the laws of nature and of nature's God. And because of my respect to the opinions of mankind, we are going to declare the causes which impel us to our separation. That's as responsible as you can possibly be in declaring this. Of course, also, we need to point out that this Declaration of Independence, given before the real fighting actually started, and then that was the first time in history that we know of that has ever happened. And then for them to carry these principles forward after the war had been won and to use them to establish their form of government, that Novus Ordo Seclorum, that is amazing. That has never been done in the history of the world. And everybody had told them that it was impossible because this government, this form of government, this Republican form of government that they were establishing was for self-government, which the majority of the world, the great majority of the world, said that's impossible. You can't do it. Men, humans, do not have the capability to govern themselves. And so we're going to talk about now the principles, those primary truths, those first principles. We hold these, and it's the second paragraph, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them, the people, shall seem most likely to effect, to bring about their safety and happiness. And then they go one step farther in that responsibility, and they say prudence. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, nay, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injury and usurpation, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And those are our principles. Those are the principles that established our government. Those are the primary truths, the first principles of the government of the United States, a government that the world said was impossible. Then they listed 27 facts, 27 items, this long train of abuses and usurpations. And then they go all the way to the bottom where they give the actual Declaration of Independence in the Declaration of Independence. And so I'll read the last paragraph. And I've already, in the first two paragraphs we read, they mention the Supreme Being in each of those paragraphs. And in the last paragraph, they again mention the Supreme Being twice. And it says this: we, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, to conclude peace, to contract alliances, to establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And then the pledge, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And that is a main part of our Declaration of Independence.
Well, Ben Martin, thank you so much for taking us through that. And those guys signed that as they knew the British were just down the river, not very far. So
that's true.
It's pretty amazing. So, Ben Martin, thank you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. This is my pleasure to do this.
And so I wish you and yours a very happy Independence Day weekend. And again, thank you to the Harris family for bringing forth this show. Ben Martin, we'll talk to you next month.
Okay, thank you, Kim.
And our quote for today is Thomas Jefferson, and it is very appropriate for what is happening in America today. And he said, there is no justification for taking away individuals' freedom in the guise of public safety. So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, read the Declaration of Independence, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.